Welcome to Ask an Innovator, where we interview senior executives about innovation. You can find us at askaninnovator.com or subscribe with your favorite podcast app. I'm your host, Josh Barker, CEO of City Innovation Labs. I'm here with Saim Salahuddin. He's the VP of Development with Level Construction. Welcome, Saim.
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Great to be here.
Absolutely. So today we're going to talk about really innovation in the construction industry, right? I would love to hear a little bit more about you and a little bit more about Level Construction.
Sure. My name is Saim, and I'm the VP of Development, as you mentioned, for Level Construction. We are a commercial construction firm, been around for 15 years, based in Chicago, Illinois, Houston, Texas, kind of serve those markets. And we work with some of the largest brands in the world. We're lucky to kind of be part of this evolving construction industry, and especially primarily specialized in retail, restaurants, healthcare, industrials, and all of these industries are growing in front of our eyes, and we're happy to be a part of it.
Awesome. So construction. So what to you and to Level Construction is innovation?
That's a great question. Innovation, I feel like it's kind of muddled and sometimes confused with just like creation or invention. So I think innovation is a product of a new idea, creation, or an invention times its commercialization, right? So I really feel like innovation is something that makes processes better, better, faster, cheaper.
Sure.
Right? And just having a technology or a new idea by itself, in my opinion, doesn't convert to innovation until it commercializes and brings efficiency and improves your business and the industry.
Sure.
For us in the construction industry, that means, you know, new technology, new processes, new codes, new building techniques, building types, new efficiencies. So, you know, we're constantly evolving. You know, there's new materials, new artwork, new technology such as solar, LED, you know, LEED certified products that we keep adapting to constantly. So we're kind of, we have to be innovative to keep afloat in the industry.
Sure. Now, what would you say with innovation? There's usually a driver for innovation. Like there's a challenge or an opportunity. What would you say some of the, you know, a challenge or the challenge or a couple of the challenges or opportunities that are in the construction space that is really driving innovation?
Yeah. So I think one of the big things is time and efficiency. I used to be a project manager and we used to fly around to sites and view them personally and survey them and see how they looked so we could come up with a scope. And I would be able to do maybe 5-6 sites in a week because I'm flying to these different cities. Now they do virtual surveys, right? So somebody goes in with a Matterport camera or something like that, 3D scans the whole place, you know, very high detailed. And then we're able in one day to get on a conference video call, get the landlord on there, the architect, the, you know, people from the brand, people from the construction team all together, go through these surveys, understand the conditions of existing conditions, and be able to knock out 20 in 4 hours.
Wow. You know?
So that by airline tickets, hotel rooms, expenses, my time.
Everyone else's time.
It's just gone away. And, you know, it's better for the environment. You know, you're not using fuel or hotel laundry or whatever that impacts that. Right. So I think that's a big driver. Another thing is cost and efficiency. Yeah. Price has been a big driver in construction from day one, right? And then whatever we can do to make processes more efficient and save costs on our end and for them to the clients is always welcome. In fact, in construction, there's a term for it, value engineering, right? So there's actually a real process of innovating to save price by coming up with different ways to do something or a more innovative way of something that was presented in the plans. Time and price, I think, are like big drivers of innovation in our industry.
Yeah, and you and I were talking about, even prior to the podcast, of how the construction industry is really competitive, right? It's really competitive and the margins are surprisingly thinner than a lot of industries. And there's a lot of expectations put on the construction industry too of, hey, you're making too much money, you're gouging me, right? And it's like, that's what's probably driving a lot of the efficiency. Is innovation's helping drive more efficiency? Would you say that's probably?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, as we're talking about the GC model or general contractor model for construction firm is transparency is key, right? So we are one of the only industries in the world that on our proposal we list exactly how much your profit is, next to that how much that percentage is. Okay, and I'm gonna tell you that 99 out of 100 times people come back and try to like beat me down on that. So
I bet.
Me showing you or us showing that price is never in our benefit,
right?
And now the other I have always said like people that manage construction companies are the best managers in the world, because you're managing people across multiple facets of life, you know, like field people, more corporate people, and then you're managing funds, right? So you start a project, you have $2 million. It's your job to make sure everything falls in line and you still make a profit out of that and you're still delivered on time and your client's still happy. So there's a lot of, you know, it's like kind of engineered backwards. If you set the parameters first and then you try to make it work, right? So, you know, one of the benefits of that is it's created more innovation, more ways of creating efficiency, saving money, you know, to be able to get closer to that budget price for your client. So definitely, that's one of the things that drive it.
Sure. And what are some examples in like, if putting some meat on the bones of innovation in the construction industry, of making things more efficient, cost less, take less time, what would be some examples that you recently, these are starting to be more well-known or used common practice?
So, you know, speaking of time and money, another thing is safety too, right? Construction is a very high industry for, you know, unsafe things to happen or potentially happen.
That's right.
So a good example that I always like to give is something that kind of brings all three of these points we've talked about together, right? So efficiency, cost, and safety. An example that comes to mind for that is building inspections being done by drones. A drone can fly over six buildings, inspect the roofs, and, you know, sometimes these buildings have like a rusty access ladder. Sometimes the inspectors are not allowed to go on the roof because of insurance reasons, because, you know, sometimes these buildings are in really bad shape. You don't want to get up there.
Sure.
Right? So this documents things from angles that you wouldn't be able to see, you know, just standing there. You see from a drone, you see the whole, you know, rooftop and the condition. And also drones now can do depth and measurements with their cameras, you know. So that's a great example, I feel like, you know, where one inspector can go and do so many inspections and miss things. Now he can just use this tool. He's safe. It's cheap. The whole thing is video documented for him to later go and look at because the drone is recording everything that he's seeing up there.
Right.
And then once he's done, he just shares that with everybody. Right. So if he didn't see something right, somebody in his office can see that video and say, hey, I would go and revisit this portion of the roof, or that doesn't look, you know, copacetic. So I think that's a great example. Past that, there are some other things that we're starting to see. So the Internet of Things, I think, is going to play a big role in this. So safety sensors and building materials. Now, building materials have been something that have really held us back for, you know, decades. You know, we just use the same basically form of building. But now, new building materials are coming out that are self-healing. They're lighter, energy efficient, have self-sufficient power built into them, like solar, and they have sensors and they communicate, you know? So your building can now let you know where you need to repair it or what's, you know, not working, or, you know, it's creating a responsive sensor-laden environment, right? Also for safety. These same sensors measure heat, humidity. Body cameras and job site cameras show people what's happening at a certain job site, if it's being safe or not. Definitely a lot of things are happening now that will be interesting to see in the next, you know, few years.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, this has traditionally been, you and I were talking about being a sleepy industry where it sounds like people are just starting to, and organizations are just starting to wake up. Right?
I mean,
with, hey, there's these new technologies, there's digital, there's all these digital transformation, all drones, a bunch of different things. Now technology is starting to play a huge role, sounds like a way more important role in construction companies.
Absolutely. And, you know, there was this big philosophy, I feel like, of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? But I think that that's really kind of come back to bite us in the behind, the industry. So what's happening is because this kind of disconnect. So construction is one of the largest industries in the world, right? Trillions and trillions of dollars across the globe. And, you know, it can be compared to other similar industries like manufacturing, for example, right? And if you look across the board, you know, industries like manufacturing, their efficiency and output per worker per hour has like doubled in the last 15, 20 years, right? With construction, it stayed the same. And the reason this happened in the manufacturing sites, you know, things we talked about, like technology, AI, robots, autonomous technology, less room for error, less humans doing things that can go bad, right? Mm-hmm. So that has really not translated in the construction industry. It's still, you know, the same carpenter going there building wood tables and or wood soffits and stuff, and then the same tile guys going in there doing a person does this much work per the amount of money they make per hour. And the way to do it efficiently or save time is to double up on people. Right. So it's a very, very rudimentary process. So we haven't seen that growth in construction, which we have in like these other industries. And it's kind of showing. And because of this, it's creating a gap between the younger workforce, because the younger workforce is preferring to go work with companies and industries that are tech forward, innovation forward. Right. It is very, very hard now to find you know, young up and coming people in the workforce that want to choose being an electrician or being, you know, a plumber or carpenter or a, you know, mason by choice. Hmm. So governments are starting programs to invite these young people to learn these trades because they foresee a huge gap in workforce coming up in the near future. So that I feel like is one of the big indicators of how construction has like really lacked in this direction. But then now, as these problems are being realized and that this industry is so ripe for people to come in and make billions of dollars off of, if not more, just innovating and, you know, making processes more efficient.
Yeah.
So I think now that that's happening, now it's going full steam ahead. Yeah. And I don't really think everybody has a good grasp on what they're getting into, but we're just moving forward. We're innovating.
Right. How do you think this whole innovation push came about? Like, was there a spark? Is it the owners of the buildings, the people, your customers, are they driving, like, pushing innovation? Or is it, like, the competitive landscape is driving that?
Yeah. So I think a couple of things. Price and economy really drives things, right? So, for example, like, rising minimum wages for restaurants is making them put digital screens so people can order directly and not have to interact with a human. Like, so, you know, they're coming up with innovation to circumvent this increasing cost of hourly wages.
Yeah. Right?
So I feel like the same thing kind of happened in construction too. You know, after 2008, when the economy crashed and, you know, everything went upside down, construction is the first thing that gets halted.
Right.
Nobody's building new stores when they can't sustain the ones they already have. So I think after, like, before 2008, people made a killing. Right? Construction was just booming. You know, we had the retail revolution happen and strip malls and everything started popping up in the 80s, 90s, you know, early 2000s. And it was great. You know, there everybody had thousands of stores and they couldn't open enough stores. Right?
Yeah.
And then when the crash happened, there's a lot of empty space. Right? So now if you see every day in the news, I hear about how some big box is going under, you know, and they're not doing too hot, or they're reimagining their business to be something else because people don't really need 40,000 square feet to buy stuff anymore.
Mm.
Right? So it's really changing the landscape, really changing what retail stores look like. You know, now they want to be 2,000 square feet as a showroom and have a warehouse off site where they just ship everything from, like, you know, in an Amazon. So like Tesla is a great example. They were the first people that they create a showroom and all their cars are parked off-site in a warehouse. And their showroom is actually like a store where they have like a couple cars. You got kind of go see them and you like them. You test drive the ones they have. And then everything else is stored. So everywhere where you can't have a dealership, Tesla can have a retail store. Like downtown Chicago. They don't need 200,000 square feet of lot space.
Right.
So these are things that are changing how building types, retail environments, interior stores, how they're being built and how they're being kind of designed. So I feel like that has been a big push in forcing the industry to seek other ways to make things more efficient. Now, in a parallel, I also feel like the recent last 10, 15 years of advancement in collaboration, being able to work remotely with people, has really helped.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember one of the first clients I worked with is Rite Aid Pharmacies. And I remember we had to mail the bid. We put our bid in, get it like stamped, date stamped, and send it in the mail, and they review it, and then they would like stamp it and whatever and send it back. And it was like a multi-week process. These things went back and forth. And then now all of that happens in like a matter of minutes, right? I can just submit your bid. You just kind of pops into a bid comparison. You see where all the numbers lie. They have their own kind of data. They compare it against historical data of how much it costs to build. So I think some of those things have definitely made it efficient. Before we started, we were talking about data and the role that big data plays into everything in our life now.
Absolutely.
That's one of the things, too, that I feel like played a role in this advancement, is because now, in the last 10 years or so, construction data has been really analyzed. And now brands and multi-unit operators can compare and have a preset boundaries of, hey, if there's a store in Chicago, in the city, in line, inside a high-rise building, it should cost between this and this. And they can do that by comparing 17,000 restaurants or for some of these bigger brands. And then it gets very, very, very precise, very accurate. So you couldn't do that before, right? Before you had AI and machine learning and computers that could process all this data, you would have to go through, you know, 17,000 sets of plans and bids and feedback from what went wrong there, right? So I think that's like one of the big things. And it also kind of reduces the ability of companies to take advantage of the clients, because now the clients have historical data. They know how much it costs. You know, if I give you a price for something that's $1 million and cost you last time to make for $700,000, you have all that data. And you can actually ask me, down to the number of doors, the number of bolts, where are you coming up with this $300,000 extra dollars,
right?
Whereas before it was just like, this is what it costs to build.
Right.
This is the market. These are the, you know, subcontractors. Tough luck.
Yeah.
Right. That led to companies needing us to show them our pricing, our profits, that kind of stuff. Because there was definitely this, you know, wild, wild west, free for all.
Right.
And then now it's gone to such a micro point that now it's, you know, negatively impacting the industry.
Yeah.
Because there's no barrier to entry. As long as you get a general contractor license, slip in a low bid, we're in the same table then, right? So these are some of the things that I feel like with advancing technology, companies such as Contractor Score and other big affiliations and memberships that are able to vet and qualify quality firms and keep everybody in the same playing field is very important. So now I'm starting to see a lot of the bigger brands like McDonald's or some of these, you know, big global brands. They really vet out their vendors before they onboard. So all of these are things, you know, like now you can audit my company, check all our background, check our financials, everything all through like a website. These are things that were really difficult before and it took forever and, you know, it was just impossible to get this data. So I definitely feel like this data push with the desire to make things more efficient and reduce costs of construction is the driving factor, or are the driving factors behind this kind of influx of new innovation in our industry. So it's very interesting that even though it's pushing the industry towards innovation, it's also taking away the power from individual companies that are on the forefront that can deploy those innovations.
Right.
Right. So that's the other aspect of it where, yes, it is helping brands and owners and the people who want to get building done. But it's also kind of making them stuck
right.
in the same era and the same process and the same methods.
Oh, for sure.
Right? So that's definitely the flip side of it.
As level construction, how do you guys deal with that? Of your margins are thin. I mean, how do you guys innovate? Is there an innovation team you have, or is it everyone's responsibility to innovate? Or how do you guys go about implementing new technology? Does every project have new technology, or is it as a as needed basis, let's trial this? How does that look?
That's a great question, actually. Now, on the other side of it, driving technology and innovation, because of these restraints, necessity being the mother of invention, based out of necessity, you kind of explore some things. So when you kind of start to realize that you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and you know your margins can't increase and your price can't go up, you start to find other ways to make things more efficient, to save cost, to offer some value-added benefits, to provide something more to your client, which for the same price that they're getting.
Right.
Right. And then also, how do you, things like safety, accidents cost money, right? On job sites cause delays, delays cost money. Errors, bad information, bad drawings, bad measurements. These are things that slow down, delay, mess up, and are hindrances in the process, right? So one of the things we use is building information modeling, BIM. So BIM has been something that we've really utilized to make things more efficient for us and to offer this awesome value to our client and save them money and headaches and delays. So a good example is we just did a ground up Hampton Inn and Suites in Waukegan, Illinois. It's a ground up hotel. Multiple floors, many rooms, a lot of plumbing, a lot of electric. So we did the whole project with BIM in mind on the forefront. So while we were into the design phase, we were able to run these test modules, these sample scenarios of what happens if you turn the water on and it pitches through the whole building. And we were able to identify that because of the, you know, different points in the building and the ground where a pitch wouldn't work, where water would actually stagnate there. That's a really expensive thing to find out once you're in the building phase
or doing
and changing something. So that's a very small example of it. But overall, doing that on a $10+ million project saves you a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right. And then a lot of headaches. And then it helps us present to the client the look, whatever you designed, we also modeled it for you. These are the things that we feel could be concerns. And if they take it into account, you know, their architect is usually very happy to hear this from us, this feedback. And, you know, it just helps them curb this at the beginning. So one of the things that we're trying to do now to make this more efficient is design build. Design build is that, you know, one stop, we partner with our partner architect firm. And then we do all of this together so that the client is getting a collaborative team that everybody's on the same page. Because historically, the way this industry has worked, you go sign a lease or buy a piece of land. You go get an architect. Architect designs all these plans. And then you take those plans and send them out to like five contractors that you may know, you may not know. And you're like, here's some drawings. You all take your best shot at a number.
Right.
Right. And all these people are like, and you know, by the way, you have 14 days to do this. Right. And then so it's like, hey, we're building a 100,000 square feet hotel. Or even if it's a, you know, 4,000 square feet restaurant or whatever, the amount of time that the construction firm has been given to understand the project is 2 weeks. And they're pricing it at the same time. And they're trying to make a schedule for the same time. And then when they have it, then they have to worry about the other four people where their prices lay. Then you're trying to beat that price. You're trying to bring your price down.
Right.
So it just becomes like this really inefficient way of doing it. So with design build, the benefit is an architect and a construction firm that works together well. They partner up. So now there's not like, you know, the contractor, our skill sets, things we know about in the field, things about costing, budgeting, we're coordinating that with the owner and the architect as we're designing the building. More efficiency, clear channels of communication. It's very hard for me as a contractor to come in after an architect has done drawing and say, hey, I think this is a bad idea. You
can, right.
Right. And then they're like, oh, well, are you making my architecture firm look like we don't know what we're doing, you know? So it's just becomes this, you take three people that don't know each other, put them in a room and say, let's go build a building.
Yeah.
Right. And it's very inefficient. And it's just because of this price point and keeping contractors in check, this has been the norm. This has now become the norm. So these are some of the ways that BIM saves us making mistakes. Right. And then we offer that as value to our clients. So I say, okay, you know, me and XYZ is at the same price, but do you get this? Right. Experience, relationships is a big one too. Relationships with your subcontractors, right? If you have a good relationship with them, if you give them business, if you're loyal to them, they give you good prices. And then they do reliable work. They don't do shoddy stuff. So you have quality, dependability. So these are some of the things that you have to kind of take on yourself to be innovative in this market, to be able to stay afloat, be competitive, keep growing.
Sure.
So, sure. You know, a lot of room for innovation.
Oh, absolutely. Sounds like it's ripe for innovation.
100%.
What do you see in the next 3 to 5 years for innovation in the construction industry?
So I think that the next 3 to 5 years is going to be the bring everything back down to zero and like where construction, technology, and innovation kind of collide. And then, so the next 3 to 5 years, I feel like are going to be the groundwork. And I feel like next maybe 7 to 15 years is where you're going to see the whole industry change. If you think about it, even big tech companies, look at Tesla, Elon Musk. He's investing in roof shingles, battery solar powers for powering your home, sensors that connect with your car. This is definitely not just people like you and me thinking about this.
Right.
This is the next industry that people can become billionaires off of.
Yeah.
I know some other tech entrepreneurs that have started websites that are supposed to be like more of the Uber platform of construction. You book a guy comes up. Look at Amazon. Amazon home installation services, right? That's a very early handyman approach, but I definitely feel like they're going to expand that into more substantial service because that's their competitive advantage now,
Right.
right? So I definitely think that everybody's realizing this. Virgin, Richard Branson just invested in a big construction company. So there's definitely headway and interesting things to come. I'm very excited for it, actually.
Oh yeah. Sounds like the next 5, 10 years are going to be a very interesting one.
Interesting. And then also, things are going to change. I really think people who know, there's this disconnect. There's people who know construction because they've been in the field since their whole life, right? And then there's people that utilize this technology and innovation that don't know much about the field work of
Right.
construction. So it's a very interesting merger where you have somebody who knows both. And those are the type of people we need in this
Yeah.
industry. The people who understand the nuances and the challenges of a real construction job site,
Right.
and then people who know innovation, technology, and the way things are going in the future well enough to be able to kind of
Merge both of those
merge
together.
both those together.
Yeah.
I think that has to be a breakthrough that we're still waiting for.
Oh yeah, I could see that. It's a very similar problem of you've got the architect, you got the builders,
Right.
you've got the technologist, and then you have the actual construction crew, and it's two different mindsets
100%.
not understanding each other, coming together and being able to make sense of it all. So,
Absolutely.
yeah. What would you say out of all of this? I mean, what have you learned being in the construction industry? What would you say a key learning for you is that it's kind of a universal learning that as listeners are listening to this that they can apply to their business?
That's a great question. And the funny thing is, the greatest thing that I learned doing this is that as we advance and as the landscape changes with new innovations in technology, one thing is becoming more and more trendy every day and has been forever is humans. There's still human beings doing all this. The power of relationships and bringing that personalization, bringing that customer service, bringing that personal attention back is really what I would say is our advantage. 90% of our clients are repeat business. That's very unheard of in the construction industry. The clients that work with us love us, and we use them as reference for more projects. They will go out of their way, say good things. And so I really feel like that is something that through this evolving process got lost in the mix. I feel like that, and it doesn't matter what business you are, right? Like what industry you're in. As long as you keep that customer service, customer experience at the forefront of your business, revenues increasing, profits go hand in hand with user experience. Amazon's a great example of that. So creating an expectation, setting expectation, delivering on that, you can't beat that. I would say have fun, go out and change the world and adopt all this technology, but do keep in mind that it's still human beings end to end utilizing these technologies to make relationships, build things, and grow.
Yeah, that's a great reminder. Great reminder. I appreciate your time, Syme. It's
Thank you,
been
Josh.
awesome.
It has been. It was very fun to be part of this, and I hope our listeners get something good out of it.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Ask an Innovator. Visit us on our website, www.askaninnovator.com. This podcast has been sponsored by City Innovation Labs.